Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 2 for Thursday, April 30th, 2026. We'll begin with some obituaries. Larry R. Bartram, 91 of Bement, died Thursday, April 28th at Goldwater Care Clinton. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Hines Funeral Home, 348 North Pyatt Street, Bement. Mary Ellen Evans, 89 of Rantoul, passed away Monday, April 27th. A service honoring Mary Ellen's life will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, May 7th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center's Lux Chapel, 1551 East Grove Avenue, Rantoul. Following the service, she will be laid to rest in Maplewood Cemetery. Visitation will be held immediately before the service from 10 to 11 a.m. at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made in Mary Ellen's name to the Alzheimer's Association. John G. Husinga, 79 of Clinton, died Wednesday, April 29th at Carle Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Calvert Funeral Home, 201 South Center Street, Clinton. Francis W. McCracken, 85 of Urbana, died Monday, April 27th at Carle Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Renner Wyckoff Chapel and Crematory, 1900 South Philo Road, Urbana. Carol Ann Parker, 82, passed away peacefully on Monday, April 27th, 10:20 p.m. at the Haven of Tuscola. The family extends its deepest gratitude to Vicki Miller, Cindy Burke, and the entire staff of the Haven of Tuscola and Transitions Hospice for the compassionate care and support they provided to Carol. Family and friends are invited to a visitation at St. Malachy's Catholic Church, Rantoul, on Tuesday, May 5th at 10 a.m., followed by a Mass of Christian burial at 11 a.m. Burial will follow at 2:30 p.m. in St. Mary's Cemetery, Pisodum. In lieu of flowers, send donations to the Henry J. Smith Trust for support of St. Malachy's School or the Rantoul Historical Museum. Joshua Ryan Rusher, 41, of Denver, died Saturday, April 18th in Denver. Visitation will be from 9 to 10 a.m. Friday at Calvert Funeral Home, 201 South Center Street, Clinton. Services will be at 10 a.m. Friday at the funeral home with the Reverend Paul Stroop officiating. Burial will be in Wilmore Cemetery, Clinton. Janet F. Schonkweiler, 84 of Monticello, formerly of Bement, died Tuesday, April 28th at Maple Point, Monticello. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Mackie Wright Funeral Home, 215 East Washington Street, Monticello. Cassandra Cassie N. Smith, 34 of Clinton, died Saturday, April 25th in Clinton. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon Monday at Calvert Funeral Home, 201 South Center Street, Clinton. Services will be at noon Monday at the funeral home with Pastor Jonathan Roberson officiating. Burial will be in Long Point Cemetery, Wapella. Ellie Wasaka Kumana Tuzalana of Champaign died Tuesday, March 24th at Carle Foundation Hospital. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Renner Wyckoff Chapel and Crematory. Diane Weisenbarn, 91 of Paxton, died Tuesday at Gibson Area Hospital. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at Beyer Family Funeral Services, 406 East Pell Street, Paxton. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home with the Reverend Pat Allen officiating. Burial will be in Glen Cemetery, Paxton. Lynn Ann Wilkinson, 81 of Philo, died Wednesday, April 29th at Country Healthcare and Rehab, Gifford. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Evergreen Cremation Services, 314 Tiffany Court, Champaign. Now we have some sports. The sequel is even better. Player of the Year, Jackson Davis from Warren Township. Star guard, now repeat winner, is a pivotal piece in latest successful season for Blue Devils. Jackson Davis had played exactly 0 minutes of varsity basketball when the Warren Township boys basketball team played Grant during its season opener on November 20th, 2023. That didn't stop the Bulldogs from opening the game with a box and one defense specifically targeted at the then freshman guard. Grant wasn't successful in its defensive efforts. Davis scored 15 points in his varsity debut, and Warren posted an 84-55 victory. "I was kind of shocked," Davis said. The memory of his first high school basketball game still clear 2.5 years later. "There's no way my first game I'm seeing a box and one, but it just showed right away the amount of respect teams had for me and how much of a threat I was freshman year on varsity basketball." It wasn't the only non-traditional defense Davis would face that season or the next. The same was true this season. Warren's opponents have been willing to try anything to slow down the 6'1" guard. Like Grant in that late November game in 2023, few teams have pulled it off successfully. Davis might not be unstoppable, basically an impossibility on the basketball court, but he's not far off at this level. The result was another successful season for Warren in a 30-win campaign, and for its star guard, who averaged 23.8 points, 5.3 rebounds, 5.3 assists, and 3.5 steals, to repeat as the News-Gazette All-State Player of the Year in 2026, after he won it in 2025, too. "It's rare to start on a varsity as a freshman," Warren coach Zach Ryan said. "It's also rare to come in as a freshman and go 31-5 like he did his freshman year, and follow it up the next year and finishing a point away from a state championship. He's continued to progress and got better at things every year. He had some games this year where it was fun to kind of sit back and watch. Kind of a bummer how it ended for us, but I think that's only going to motivate him for his last go-around here." Warren went 30-4 this season, but couldn't repeat its state tournament run to Champaign. The Blue Devils won their third straight Class 4A regional title before losing in the sectional semifinals to Rockford Auburn. The Knights were one of the few teams to slow down Davis, who played through an injury in the sectional and wound up with just 9 points and 4 rebounds. Most teams were far less successful in trying to stop the 4-star guard and consensus top 50 prospect in the country in the class of 2027. Davis has 10 Power Conference offers, including 6 from Big Ten programs, for a reason. While Auburn was able to capitalize on its physical defensive approach directed toward Davis, it wasn't a repeatable approach during the course of the regular season. Davis is all too familiar with that kind of attention, given he's been considered one of the best players in the state from the first moment he stepped on the court for the Blue Devils. Box and one and other junk defenses haven't typically worked. Neither have various zone defenses. Teams picked up Davis full court hadn't fared much better. He doesn't get flustered on the floor no matter what a team is doing, which is hard for any basketball player. But he's got a unique ability to not get sped up, Ryan said. It's almost like he's playing in slow motion. That's a natural gift he has. I've never had to once in 3 years say, "Hey, Jackson, you're going too fast. Slow down." He's always in control. As a coach, when your point guard is like that and always in control, you're in pretty good spot. He's always in control of the game. That doesn't really bother him, and he's willing to trust his teammates. When teams would do that this year, he had other guys that would step up. Davis said his first 3 years of high school basketball had been a lot from a physical and mental standpoint. He understands why he drew extra attention from day one, and the day he thrived for Warren only added to it. Davis had a splashy debut for Warren, averaging 19.5 points, 5.3 assists, 3.6 rebounds, and 3.5 steals during the 23-24 season. Year two wasn't much different: 19.6 points, 6.0 assists, 4.3 rebounds, and 2.9 steals per game, but came at a higher efficiency and against a tougher schedule. This past season continued both trends. Davis set new career highs from an efficiency standpoint, both inside the three-point line and beyond the arc, in addition to knocking down a career-best 82% of his free throws. "Knowing I'm going to be at the top of the scouting report, I've been fortunate to have many good teammates who understand the circumstances," Davis said. "When I'm getting double-teamed and I pass it over, they've been able to knock down shots and open up the floor for me to be able to also score and dominate the game." How Davis has handled his success on the court and the attention it has created off it has impressed his coach. In addition to repeating as News Gazette All-State Player of the Year, Davis also became a two-time Illinois Mr. Basketball winner this season. Only Belleville West's E.J. Liddell, 2018 and 2019, and Simeon's Jabari Parker, 2012-2013, repeated as Illinois Mr. Basketball. Those two, plus Glenbrook North's John Shire, 2005-2006, and King's Jamie Brandon, 1989-1990, are the only two-time News Gazette All-Area Player of the Year recipients. "He's pretty masterful about handling his success," Ryan said. "He doesn't let it go to his head. It's a lot for him, even nowadays, too, with social media and everything. He does a good job of staying measured. No matter how much success he has, he's still always trying to get better. That's a credit to him. He handles success and praise probably as well as any kid can in this day and age." Previous success hasn't waylaid Davis from improving his craft either. "The time and effort he puts in alone in the gym," Ryan said, "is as responsible for his continued improvement during the course of the past three seasons as anything else. The idea that there's always something to improve continues to push Davis. So does the one accomplishment he hasn't yet claimed. I want to win all the Player of the Year honors again," Davis said about his senior year goals. "I know that comes with winning, so my main overarching goal is to be focused on winning the state championship. That's been my goal since freshman year, and it's not going to change for my senior year." And there's a photo on the front page of the sports page with the headline, "They Have Room to Brag." Confident, loose Spartans hand sages their first loss of the season. A loose demeanor permeated throughout the St. Joseph Ogden baseball team on Wednesday evening. With the sun starting to set and the Spartans enjoying a 7-0 road win against previously unbeaten Monticello in an Illini Prairie Conference showdown, the goal shifted from what they had just accomplished on the field to what they could do in order to distract starting pitcher Asher Pruner. The senior right-hander was a popular person for anyone with a microphone after he threw an efficient five-hit shutout to help SJO win its 21st consecutive game. So his teammate decided to have a little fun while Pruner answered questions just outside the on the third baseline. A few players put their teammates on their shoulders and had a quick fight with plastic swords. Then one by one they decided to put their maroon SJO hats on top of the ones still adorned to Prumer's head and see how many they could balance on there before the pile fell to the turf. Then the picture is Centennial's Arbella Almarez and makes a play on the ball as Champaign Central's Layla Spindler holds possession on Wednesday evening in Big 12 girls soccer match at Tommy Stewart Field in Champaign. The Maroons held off the host Chargers for the 3-2 victory. Girls soccer, Champaign Central 3, Centennial 2. Maroons show resiliency win tight matchup against Charters. That's what you like to see. As Steve Wentley announced as Champaign Central's girls soccer coach before the Maroons game against Centennial on Wednesday, his players started yelling happy birthday. By the end of the game, they were singing it to him as they helped him celebrate his 42nd birthday with a 3-2 win over their crosstown rival. "Last time we played on my birthday, we lost," Whiteley said with a laugh. "It makes it a little easier for them to sing. I don't think they would be singing happy birthday if we lost." Whiteley said it best after the game that it was a nail-biter, but that's just what you'd expect in this matchup. Seemingly every time they play, the Maroons and the Chargers give the fans an instant classic, and Wednesday was no different. "It's Central Centennial," Whiteley said. "So much credit to Centennial. They always give us a game, but they also bring the best out of us. That's what you like to see. We finished our chances that mattered, and to get another win against Centennial is huge." Centennial coach Paul Hackman agreed with Whiteley, calling it one of the more fun rivalry games they've played in the last 4 or 5 years. The Chargers controlled possession for the first 10 minutes and had a few good scoring chances, but Central made the most of its first opportunities in the 15th minute when senior Chloe Sikori and a corner kick straight into the net to put the Maroons ahead 1-0. 4 minutes later, freshman Kalen Elliott slipped behind the defense and beat the goalkeeper to give Central a 2-0 lead, and that's where the score stayed until halftime. A few minutes into the second half, the momentum started to shift back to Centennial. Off of a corner kick from senior Elena Kimball in the 48th minute, junior Alicia Fernandez settled the ball with her chest, passed it up to herself with her knee, and fired a 30-yard bullet to the top left corner of the net, all in one motion without letting the ball touch the ground. Fernandez found that top left corner again in the 56th minute, placed it there on a penalty kick like it was second nature, to tie the game at 2 apiece. "She's who we try to go through," Hackman said. "Our only problem is she wants to do everything, so she'll drop back and play defense sometimes. If we can just get her to believe that she can do it all up top and take people on. When she's going 100% full speed, she's definitely one of the best players around. We have a lot of talented players, but when we take her off the field, it totally changes who's the alpha." The final 20 minutes were as tense as you could imagine, and Socorro scored what turned out to be the game-winning goal in the 69th minute on a 35-yard free kick tucked just under the crossbar. The Chargers scrambled to tie it again in the final minutes, and in a last-ditch effort, Fernandez had her shot blocked by Central's defenders to end it. Socorro was the go-to offensive weapon for the Maroons in this game, and it's because she had to be. Central star junior forward and returning News Gazette All-Area Player of the Year, Riley Scholes, was out after straining her quad against Normal U-High on Saturday, so Socorro knew she had to step up. "There's always added pressure when you don't have key players," Socorro said. "The whole week I've just been telling myself, I'll play my game and that's the best I can do." The Maroons were also without starting defender Hallie Roberts, another all-area first-teamer, after she injured her hamstring against Morton last Thursday. Whiteley knew he was going to learn a lot about his team on Wednesday, and the result was a good sign. "It took us a while to get adjusted to it, and it took me a while to figure out where we needed to be and what we needed," Whiteley said. That first goal from Chloe relaxed everybody's nerves. Sophia Crespo-Munoz got up top and caused a lot of problems for their back line and allowed our midfielders to create scoring chances. Once we found where we needed to put players in the absence of Riley, it really opened things up and gave us some confidence. The spotlight is sometimes on Riley, but there's so much quality in this team, it's hard to be a one-player team, and Riley would be the first to say she's good because she has good teammates, and it shows on a day like this. Credit to the Chargers, however, as two of their starters were also out due to injuries. Junior defender Mary Titchener tweaked her ankle on Tuesday, and freshman forward Kinley Alexander was in the final stages of concussion protocol. Still, Centennial was there at the end and had one of the area's best teams on the ropes the entire second half. "Practice doesn't always tell you who that 12th or 13th man is," Hackman said. "You don't want injuries, but when they happen, someone else steps up. Everyone needs that playing time, but it's hard to find, so you kind of look at injuries as a silver lining there. We learned that we have a couple extra players we can count on." Whiteley said Scholes could be out for a couple weeks, which could take the Maroons right up to the start of postseason play. This win proved that they can still compete without their best player. "We're a good team. It doesn't matter who's on the field. We're going to give 100% every game," Socorro said. "We're going to learn from this for sure. When we play in regionals, it's going to be tough, so we'll just have to adjust to it." Potential NCAA tournament expansion. Underwood is proponent for playing more games. The NCAA tournament has not officially been expanded, but reports late Tuesday afternoon made it clear it's only a matter of when, not if, it moves from 68 to 76 teams. ESPN's Pete Thamel was first to report the closeness of approval for expansion Tuesday, which confirmed an early April report from Yahoo Sports' Ross Dellinger about the expected move to a 76-team format. The next steps, per Thamel's report, include the NCAA finalizing contracts with its media partners for the tournament and then subsequent approval from the necessary NCAA committees to expand the field. A move pushed by the power conferences to generate more at-large bids for their leagues. 8 additional at-large bids to get to 76 teams would see what's now known as the first four. 8 teams playing 4 games in Dayton, Ohio, growing to reach 24 teams playing in 12 games across 2 sites. Dayton is expected to remain a host while a second westward site would be utilized. Count Brad Underwood, as a supporter of an expanded NCAA tournament, moving from 68 to 76 teams for the premier postseason event in college basketball, in fact, isn't growing the game enough, in the Illinois coach's opinion. I would love to see all sorts of different things with expansion, Underwood said in early March. Not necessarily just teams, but what the format looks like in extending the season. I'm a big proponent, obviously, of more games and expanding the season. We don't play enough games. We're going to have 110 practices, and we don't need that many. Let's go play games. We have an incredible product in the NCAA tournament and March Madness. It obviously runs into April, so why not a little longer? 5-for-5 proposal. Top Illini coaches support age-based eligibility change. Brett Bielema's role on the FBS Oversight Committee has put him front and center as college football deals with constantly evolving structure. Bielema has also long been a proponent of athletes receiving 5 years to play five seasons. A change to NCAA eligibility that appears to be moving forward after Monday's report from the Division I Board of Directors recommending to the Division I Cabinet to advance with that age-based eligibility change. When that change would be made is still to be determined. Bielema got on the phone 2 weeks ago just to make sure it wouldn't happen this month. I got on a call a week ago where I said, hey, is there any chance of this happening before this Friday, Bielema said. Bielema's concerns were centered around players like Hank Beatty and Melvin Priestley going through the NFL draft process that could be granted a retroactive fifth season and might have taken that option. Turns out Bielema didn't need to worry about that possibility. Beatty and Priestley, who signed Sunday as undrafted free agents with the Tennessee Titans and Detroit Lions, respectively, wouldn't have received that fifth year of eligibility anyway, per the DI board. The new eligibility rules are not expected to retroactively apply to athletes whose eligibility is or will be completed by the spring of 2026. The NCAA as many times think they're falling on deaf ears, I think they are listening to common sense, Bielema said. I'm sure super excited for that moment to come forward. I'm kind of banking on it, to be quite honest. There's guys I've had discussions with, Mac Redisich, Caden Fagan. There's a number of guys on this year's roster who are two for ones. The change advanced by the DI board to the DI council for approval would grant athletes up to 5 years of eligibility, beginning the year after they turn 19 or graduate from high school, whichever happens earlier. This move would, according to Virginia Tech President and DI Board Chair Tim Sands, protect opportunities for high school student-athletes and deliver predictable outcomes for student-athletes and our schools. The DI Cabinet is expected to meet in May. Should they pass the legislation, which would not grandfather in the current class whose eligibility is expiring, it would face lawsuits challenging that exclusion. That's why Illinois men's basketball coach Brad Underwood would advocate for a measured rollout. Adopting that age-based eligibility change, in his opinion, doesn't have to happen immediately. Maybe it's for a year from now or 2 years from now, whenever they deem that timing to be right, so that there's kind of some thought to it, Underwood said on his recent Saturday Sports Talk radio appearance on WDWS. So often we do things and we put things immediately in place and affects kids in the past and people in the past, and it catches everybody off guard. Underwood was supportive of the change not being retroactive, especially this offseason. There could be programs out there that have to cut guys loose if it goes in play now, because we've been recruiting under the premise we don't have it, the Illinois coach said. That's why I hope there's some foresight and some understanding so there is preparation. I hope it's got the right teeth, so to speak. I hope it's got the ability to negate and eliminate the potentials for all the waivers and the lawsuits. I hope the teeth are in place to help solve that. Taking it up another notch, former Illini standout Dosunmu having a postseason to remember so far as Timberwolves look to close out Nuggets. Rare air, that's what former Illini men's basketball All-American Ayo Dosunmu just achieved and where he is trying to go next. Last Saturday night, the Minnesota Timberwolves guard came off the bench to score 43 points in a playoff game win against Denver. Only one other sub in league history topped 43 in the playoffs. Fred Brown had 45 for the Seattle Supersonics. Ask your parents. In a 1976 game against the Phoenix Suns. No surprise, Dosunmu moved into the starting lineup for Game 5 in Denver on Monday night and got the full attention of the Nuggets. NBC announcers Noah Eagle and Grant Hill made a big deal about Dosunmu, too. Dosunmu scored 18 points, hitting 7 of 14 shots from the field. He was 3 of 5 on three-pointers after hitting all 5 on Saturday night. Facing elimination, Denver won 125-113 to send the series back to Minneapolis for Thursday night's Game 6. The Nuggets were early 6.5-point favorites. The NBA playoffs are a grind. Teams need to win 3 best-of-7 series to reach the finals. Minnesota has never made it to the championship round. It reached the Western Conference Finals 3 times, most recently last season. It was eliminated 4-1 by eventual champion Oklahoma City. Few and far between, back to the rare air as it pertains to Dosunmu. Despite a long history of sending players to the NBA, only a handful of former Illini have made it to the NBA Finals. That's how difficult it is to accomplish. The most recent former Illinois players to reach the finals were Myers Leonard and Kendrick Nunn, who finished at Oakland, with the Miami Heat in 2020. Miami lost to LeBron James and the Lakers 4-2. Before the Heat duo, Deron Williams made it with Cleveland in 2017, and Brian Cook advanced with the Lakers in 2004. The last former Illini to win the NBA title? It's been 50 years since Steve Kuberski helped Boston beat Phoenix in 1976. Kuberski, who got caught up in the slush fund scandal and finished his college career at Bradley, also won in 1974, beating Milwaukee 4-3. The only other Illini turned NBA champions were Andy Phillip with Boston in 1957 and Johnny Red Kerr and Wally Osterkorn with the Syracuse Nationals in 1955. The Nationals later morphed into the Philadelphia 76ers. Climbing the charts, thanks to a stellar playoff run that could continue for 3 more series, Dosunmu is in the middle of his best season in the NBA. The former second-round draft pick of the Bulls has been steady since he joined the league in 2021, averaging 8 points in his first 2 seasons and bumping his average to double figures in his 3rd year. The Bulls traded him last season, allowing Dosunmu to play for a team with title aspirations. In what has to be called the best timing ever, his contract is up. That means the 26-year-old is about to get paid. A lot. But where? Minnesota has watched him flourish, and you have to think the team will do whatever it takes to get him back. Last thing the Timberwolves want is to see the 6'4", 200-pound guard go off to a division or conference rival and lead them to glory. The next decade or so could see Dosunmu become one of the league's stars, or at least a valued regular capable of dropping 40 on an opponent in the playoffs. In his first 5 NBA seasons, Dosunmu has scored 3,878 points in the regular season. He has a long way to catch the former Illinois player with the most NBA points. Eddie Johnson scored 19,202 during 17 seasons. That puts him number 68 on the career list, wedged between Bob Lanier and Gail Goodrich. Want to have some fun? Look past the top 50 on the all-time list. At number 93 with 17,707 is Magic Johnson, who is 2 spots ahead of Nikola Jokic. The next Illini on the list is number 137. Derek Harper hits 16,006 points. That puts him 4 spots ahead of legend Pete Maravich. Deron Williams is next at number 220 with his 13,804 points. Of course, he has 2 Olympic gold medals, which puts him on top of any former Illini evaluation. Force my hand, and my top 5 are Williams, Eddie Johnson, Harper, Kendall Gill, and Nick Anderson. With another 5 or 6 good years after he signs his monstrous contract, Dosunmu can join the list. This has been Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 2 for Thursday, April 30th, 2026. Hope you have a great weekend.